we have so much of our immune system in our gut, which mediates inflammation and mediates, of course, our ability to maintain an immune response through our whole body. So it really comes down to just about every body system that we have, maybe every body system we have, what's growing in the gastrointestinal tract.
Welcome back to the Mastering Your Fertility podcast. This show is all about reclaiming health, enhancing fertility, and preparing for pregnancy. We're Kristen Cornett and Dr. Haley Nye, your hosts and the creators of the online fertility platform, Tiny Feet. This episode is brought to you by our online preconception and fertility optimization course, Fertile in 5 Masterclass. This course walks you through everything you need to know to prepare for a healthy pregnancy so you can get pregnant when you want to, stay pregnant, and bring your healthy baby home. With over 6 hours of video lessons, printable worksheets, and quick reference guides, and links to all of our top recommended products and resources, Fertile in 5 really lays everything out for you in an easy-to-follow step-by-step program. If you're ready to stop stressing over getting pregnant and feel confident and empowered on your fertility journey, then this is the perfect solution for you. To learn more, click on the link in the podcast episode description or go to bit.ly/fertileinfive. And if you'd like to get a free sneak peek at the full course, check out our mini course on how to choose the best prenatal supplements, which actually walks you through step 3 of Fertile in 5 Masterclass. You can get signed up for the free course through the link in the podcast episode description or by going to bit.ly/prenatal supplements. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. If you're new to the podcast, allow me to introduce us. We're a functional nutritionist and naturopathic doctor team, and our passion is helping couples get pregnant naturally and have healthier babies. We have a virtual practice together through Tiny Feet, where you can schedule one-on-one consults with us to investigate your health and get your fertility on track. And we also offer online courses for those looking for a more do-it-yourself approach. You can learn more about us and what we do on our website at tinyfeet.co. If you happen to be enjoying the podcast, we would love to hear your thoughts through a review on iTunes. Not only do reviews totally make our day, but they also help us continue to get the podcast out to the women and couples who really need this information the most. Thank you so much in advance for your support. All right, you're listening to episode 50, where we interview naturopathic Dr. Jocelyn Strand about strategies for both investigating and addressing gut imbalances. Although we've talked many times on the podcast about gut health, this is the first time that we've really dug into therapeutic supplementation and discussed some of the specific products we use in clinical practice to help our clients restore gut balance and improve fertility. This is a great episode for everyone to listen to, but will be especially helpful if you're dealing with digestive symptoms, hormone imbalances, PCOS or endometriosis, autoimmune conditions, unexplained infertility, as well as inflammatory symptoms like allergies, skin issues, depression, or anxiety. Throughout the episode, Dr. Strand explains what the term dysbiosis means and which common diet and lifestyle factors contribute to gut imbalances, how our gut microbiome is connected to our overall health and specifically our fertility, some of the ways we can investigate gut health issues through both testing and other clinical strategies, what biofilms are and why a biofilm disruptor is important for a successful gut protocol, and lastly, specific formulas that we use in practice to address gut imbalances, how they work, and why they're often a much better choice than conventional therapies. We're really excited to be able to give you a little bit more insight into how we work with gut issues in our practice, especially since we address this topic so frequently on the podcast. We look into gut health as a contributing factor to health and fertility struggles in almost every client we see through Tiny Feet, which does give you some idea of just how important this topic is to us and to you. And although we talk about some highly effective products for addressing gut imbalances on today's episode, we highly recommend working with a qualified practitioner to help you through this process. Gut health is definitely complex, and I can personally attest to the difficulties that can arise from trying to go it alone without professional guidance. If you're interested in getting some help with your gut issues, we invite you to schedule a free 20-minute consult with us so we can get a sense of what you're dealing with and make individualized recommendations on how to proceed with testing and rebalancing therapies. The link to schedule with us is in the podcast episode description, and you can also find it on our website at tinyfeet.co under the Work With Us tab. All right, so let's introduce you to Dr. Strand and get started on the interview. Dr. Strand graduated from Bastyr University in 2005 with a doctorate in naturopathic medicine. Following graduation, she spent time practicing in the Seattle area, where she worked at Pharmaca Integrative Pharmacy as a primary care doctor, in a gastrointestinal clinic, and alongside a rheumatologist. She returned to Minnesota in 2008 with the vision of increasing the availability, affordability, and awareness of naturopathic medicine. Since then, she has had additional training in amino acid therapy for myriad conditions and also works as a clinical consultant for biobotanical research, which is the company and product line that we're going to be primarily discussing today on the interview. Dr. Strand is registered as a primary care provider through the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. We hope you enjoy the interview. All right. Welcome, Dr. Jocelyn Strand. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Mastering Your Fertility podcast. We appreciate you being here.
I'm happy to be here too.
We have talked quite extensively on the podcast over this past year about gut health, but it is such a big and interesting topic that we could have an entire podcast that's just 100% dedicated to gut health. So we will just continue down this this rabbit hole. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about your background and what got you interested in the microbiome?
Okay. So I'm a naturopathic doctor, as you already know. And I think in general that that education really gears us towards identifying and treating underlying cause of illness. And I don't remember in medical school, it's been a while now, but I don't remember learning the term dysbiosis. I don't remember, I mean, I graduated 2005, so it was 15 years ago, but I didn't really learn as much about it in school as I did until after I came out of school. And then it was really the kind of working with the laboratories that educated me on it. And I had this patient. It was a 3-year-old girl, and she showed up in my practice, and she was really gray and sort of listless, not very interactive, and very 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 sick little girl. So many allergies that she had just a handful of foods that she could even eat, and she had this reaction to food that looked like it was totally silent. So her mom, it was a respiratory response. She'd eat, and then intermittently and without being able to identify the cause, the mom would turn around and her daughter would be passed out on the floor and blue. And it was really scary, of course, for the mom and also scary for me as a practitioner. I thought for sure that I was going to prescribe something that the little girl was going to react to. And so I was really careful with testing on this little girl so that I wouldn't prescribe something unnecessarily. A lot of times I think in practice, we're able to make a clinical diagnosis and make a decision about trying a product and seeing if it works and kind of checking things off the list that way. And it can save people time and money. But with this particular little girl, I really wanted to know, kind of cross all my T's and dot all my I's so that I wouldn't introduce something I didn't have to for her. So we did a CDSA, a stool analysis testing for her. And it showed that she had unbalanced flora in her gut. She had overgrowth of some yeast and a few pathogenic bacteria. She also had, she didn't have enough of the commensal or the good flora. And so very carefully, I introduced a probiotic at the time. And then I also asked the company, well, what do you use to treat pediatric dysbiosis? I had never done that before. And the lab recommended Biocidin, which is an antimicrobial, herbal antimicrobial. And I used that product and I watched this little girl's health turn around. So on just 3 drops a day, I watched her go from this sort of pink and gray and unengaged to pink and really vibrant health. I mean, it was really dramatic and remarkable experience. And I think as clinicians, we all have those patients where we hit the nail on the head with a therapeutic and their change is just really dramatic. And it's one of the reasons I love working with pediatric patients, actually, is because they they improve so quickly. But it really caught my attention as a clinician of the importance of treating the microbiome and how dramatic the effect could be on our health, on everybody's health. And then, of course, I took it from there. I went and treated myself and my family, and then, started using treatments for dysbiosis really regularly and consistently in my clinical practice, and the rest is kind of history. It's just amazing what happens in a clinical practice when you start to develop strategies for treating the microbiome.
Absolutely. That's an incredible turnaround. I love stories like that. And you're so right. Children are so resilient. They recover so quickly. They've had a lot less time to accumulate some of the factors that can really influence gut health and make it harder for people to heal.
Yep. Isn't it great? It's so much fun to watch them heal quickly. It's just it's a blast. It's the best part of a clinical practice, right? Is watching those patients get better.
Yeah. I can see how it was really nerve-wracking for you too. I'm over here just like, that's so, I'd be so anxious about that, but that's really
great. I was.
Yeah. The biocidin drops are great because you can use such a small amount, and we're going to talk a little bit later about that product in particular, but yeah, with children, you could just use such a small amount and it can make a big difference.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's nice to have something that's really customizable. That's harder to do with capsules too. Mm-hmm. So tell us what the term dysbiosis means. We've defined this before in previous episodes, but for those that might be new to the podcast and haven't heard all of our gut health episodes, tell us what that term actually means.
Okay. So dysbiosis really just means unbalanced growth of the microorganisms that live on the body. And that can be, it can be in any area of the body. It can be on the skin, in the vaginal area. It can be in the gastrointestinal tract. It can be in your ears, it can be in your sinuses, even in the mouth. There are a number of different habitats that have different bugs or microorganisms that typically grow there. So it really varies from one habitat on the body to another. But you can get dysbiosis, or you can have balanced good flora in any of those areas. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that, like, when we think about the microbiome, a lot of people just think straight to the gut, but there's a lot of other bugs in other places in our bodies, and they all have a role to play in balance and health and making sure that we're not experiencing any sort of chronic symptoms in those areas.
It's really true, and there's more research coming out all the time on the importance of the microbiome in different areas. So And clinically, we see that too. I think if you skip an area, then you can re-inoculate or you can get a bug back from your sinuses that you thought you'd eradicated in the gut. And so it is important to keep all of that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about some of the factors that influence the composition and the balance in our microbiome, because there's a lot of things that can kind of keep us in balance or put us out of balance. So what are some of those really critical factors?
So I love talking about this because to me it's epigenetics, which is one of my favorite things to think about, right? And what the coolest thing about it is that we really have mostly control over what's going on in our body at any point in time, just by altering the environment that our bodies are in. And when we do that, we can alter the behavior of the microbiome. We can alter our own DNA and how it's behaving. There's so much that we have so much control over that. And, you know, as a naturopath, I try to sit back firmly into, you know, what does it look like? Why our bodies are smart. How do we get to a place where they can maintain a healthy environment on their own? So I think of course, diet, you know, if we're keeping our carbohydrate down or refined processed foods kind of on the lower end, and eating lots of whole fruits and vegetables and whole foods and simple foods. What I mean by that is not highly processed full of chemicals. You can cook complex foods, and that maybe not be a simple food, but a delicious and healthy food. So herbs and spices, just fine. Maybe not all the chemicals that you get in a processed food. Also medications. So if people get exposure to antibiotics in particular, but there are other medications as well that will alter what's growing in the gut. Our toxic load, we know that if people get a toxic exposure, that it can immediately alter the microbiome as well. And the microbiome affects toxic load. So a lot of these things will kind of circle back, and it's a two-direction or two-way street. the microbiome will affect these, all of the things that we've talked about as well. A mechanical function of the gut, so making sure people have adequate stomach acid, maybe eating smaller meals, making sure they're excreting bile and pancreatic enzymes, those things will have a pretty profound effect as well on what's growing in the gastrointestinal tract. And I really did just talk about the GI tract when we also just talked about the importance of the other microbiome areas on the body. And so, but cutting down your sugar and keeping your stress level low will affect the microbiome in the sinuses as well. In the mouth, definitely keeping your oral hygiene up and keeping your carb load down or refined sugars down as well. So,
yeah, for sure. You know, I just did some interesting research because I have a couple of family members, but one in particular that has an issue with mouth breathing at night. And I'm like, oh, this is a problem for oxygenation. And it's, you know, something that you definitely want to correct. But it was interesting to read about how that actually affects the microbiome in the sinuses and also in the mouth, and how that can influence like symptoms like congestion and postnasal drip, and like something super simple like that, like just breathing through your mouth instead of your nose when you sleep, has such a profound impact on that part of the microbiome.
Oh, that's really interesting. And I don't know if there's research on this or not, but maybe related is that in all of those secretions in the mouth, if we're mouth breathing and we dry up our saliva, that's where we introduce a lot of our immune function into the mouth, is through the saliva. So I wonder if that could be playing a role there too. I don't know.
That's really fascinating. I can't wait to dig into that more.
Interesting.
No, you don't. A lot of people don't think about like their sinus infections or these chronic allergies that they're having as being an imbalance in the microbiome that's in their mucosa up in their sinuses or inside their mouth. I know, even, you know, as a naturopathic doctor, I don't really make that connection as much, but the treatment is all very similar, rebalancing that microbiome in that area. But yeah, it is really interesting. And just talking about this makes me think of back when I took antibiotics for a kidney infection. It was after I had a pretty bad toxic exposure, which preceded the kidney infection. But it threw off my microbiome, not only in my gut, but also in my bladder and also in my vaginal canal. And so pretty much all at the same time, I had gut symptoms, I had chronic UTIs, and I had chronic vaginitis for like several years. And you know, in the conventional world, you're going to your gynecologist for the chronic vaginitis, you're going to a urologist for your UTIs, and you're going to the GI to figure out what's going on in your gut. And in all reality, it's like, oh, it all started after I had that round of antibiotics and that toxic exposure. And so it's all so very related.
Mm-hmm. I just read an article that said that it takes 2 to 5 years to rebalance after antibiotics. And of course, sometimes they're necessary. And like what you're talking about, it was necessary to use them, but it's so interesting, definitely to avoid if you can, right? The use of antibiotics, that unilateral wipeout of microorganisms.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't know at the time, but there's things that you can do to support while you're taking antibiotics or to get your microbiome back on board, which will go into some of the products for the company that you work for. But it's so important that if, you know, to have even like ahead of time, because you never know when you're going to need antibiotics. You never know when you're going to get chronically sick, but to have some type of plan ahead of time of like, okay, if I ever do need to take antibiotics, I have this like probiotic I'm going to take, and here's the steps I'm going to take to get my microbiome back on board as quickly as possible. It's just that important.
Exactly.
For sure. So let's kind of start making the connection. I still feel like, as much as we talk about this on the podcast, it's still a really difficult area for people to make the connection between what's going on in their gut and what's going on in the rest of their body. But there's a huge connection between the gut and pretty much every other system in the body. And I think there's quite a lot of literature that's piling up now that connects gut health to almost every type of chronic disease.
It's so, just so true.
Yeah. So tell us more about that. Dig into that connection a little bit more, so it makes a little bit more sense to people why gut health is so important to the rest of our overall health.
Okay. Well, I'll talk about at least the mechanisms that I understand about how the both the gastrointestinal, and I would put oral microbiome really as part of the gastrointestinal microbiome because they're so closely related to one another. I just read this a couple of weeks ago that we swallow, in a milliliter of saliva, there's 10 to the 8th microorganisms, and we swallow a liter a day. So it's
wow.
So important what's growing in the mouth, right?
That's kind of gross. Look,
I'm going to go brush my teeth right now.
Well, it makes sense that it's connected to the gut because it is all one long continuous tube from
exactly,
one end to
right?
the other.
And it sounds like common sense when you say it like that, but I don't think we necessarily think about it that way. So I appreciate that you guys are bringing that forward, you know, that connection forward. So there's this microbial shift disease basically is where things get out of balance either in the mouth or the gut. It can happen at the blood-brain barrier, can happen in the vaginal canal, where there's damage to the tissue, the mucosa, and that causes some disruption in the immune system function in that area, and it can cause disruption to the barrier that protects us from the microorganisms that are in that area. And that's kind of one of the bases for, or I don't even know if that's a word, but that's one of the ways in which we know that dysbiosis can contribute overall to systemic illness. So just virtually by getting from they induce it themselves, right? Where they get from the cavity where they live or the habitat where they live, they somehow get into the bloodstream. And then that creates inflammatory cascade. So we get more inflammation. It can create immune system imbalances in that way. And just create inflammation we now know is the source of aging, right? So it can wreak havoc on any number of cells and organisms, DNA, inside once it gets inside our body. So that's just sort of basic, this one mechanism. So that dysregulation and that can happen in the mouth, but it can also happen in the gut. If it happens in the gut, it can... those circulating immune complexes is what it's called, right? So our immune system gets activated by the inflammation in the gut, and that will get to the brain where we usually have another barrier to protect the brain. But if we get that inflammation there, and LPS, I know I'm talking sort of scientific words here, but a lot of this stuff is pretty easy to understand, that LPS lipopolysaccharides are a molecule that's in bacteria that grow in the gut. And when we get overgrowth of bacteria in the gut, it creates inflammation, and that inflammation will circulate to the blood-brain barrier, and then we can get irritation in the brain. So that means cognitive dysfunction, potentially contributing to Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis, all sorts of sort of brain diseases. But another thing that LPS does is it affects our immune system function in such a way that it predisposes us to autoimmunity as well. So then you think about, we'll use the example of multiple sclerosis, where you have increased inflammation damaging the blood-brain barrier, and then you end up also having this imbalance in immune system, or it's like a hit, the immune system takes a hit and it can no longer do its job. These are the T regulatory cells can't say, we have too much of one and too little of another. They can't keep our balance in our immune system. So it becomes a sort of feed forward cycle of inflammation and predisposition to autoimmunity. And it's a huge list now in the medical literature of diseases that are directly associated to dysbiosis. We have fatty liver disease, PCOS, which I'm sure you guys have talked about extensively on this podcast, depression, cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, inflammatory bowel diseases like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, kidney disease, Alzheimer's, I already mentioned, and MS, macular degeneration, lupus, obesity, a number of different cancers, including liver and colon cancer, reflux. That's a pretty simple one, right, compared to the rest of the things we're talking about here, but still problematic for people. Diarrhea, constipation, sinus infections, Parkinson's, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. So the list goes on and on. That's only a partial list, right? So
yeah,
it's pretty extensive, and we just understand more all the time. We have so much of our immune system in our gut, which mediates inflammation and mediates, of course, our ability to maintain an immune response through our whole body. So it really comes down to just about every body system that we have, maybe every body system we have, what's growing in the gastrointestinal tract. It's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Well, that sounds kind of scary. So I think everybody's running for the hills at this point. But no, let's bring it back.
Well, we know how to keep it healthy though. That's
exactly,
good news, right?
Exactly. So to scare people even more, no, not really. But what does this mean for fertility and baby's development? So we know that if your microbiome, if you have dysbiosis or this imbalance in your gut, it may affect not only your ability to conceive, but also the baby's development. And in what way do we know, like, how that happens?
Okay. So this is an area where I've just done some reading because, and I mentioned this before, I haven't done as much in the way of study until recently on this particular issue, but it's also fascinating. What I'll share with you is some of the research that I've talked about or I read about on the oral microbiome first, which I thought was so fascinating that the oral microbiome, there's a time for in the fetal life, not when they're born, this has already come and gone, but in the middle of gestation, where the fetal microbiota, if they test what's in the gastrointestinal tract of the fetus on a preterm baby, it actually has some microorganisms in it. That's never the case when by the time the baby's born, and when they tried to match it to some place in the mom's body, it came closest to a match for the oral microbiome, which makes so much sense because we have really fragile tissue when we're pregnant, and some of those microorganisms will get into the bloodstream from the mouth. But the cool thing is that there's actually likely a purpose for that, which is that it helps stimulate the growth of the development of the fetal immune system. So interesting, right? And as a naturopathic doctor, I think, well, there's a purpose. Our bodies are wise. There's no accident for us during pregnancy and delivery, all of that. Like, we are designed to create and to help the development of a healthy baby. And so it's mm-hmm. so interesting that we have this sort of transient exposure to the oral microbiome when we're in utero to help with the development. And, wow. and it just makes it even more important that we pay attention to that, right? To the health of the microbiome during pregnancy.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool article. And it always blows my mind when I read this stuff. Our bodies are so amazing. And
well, it wasn't only just a couple of years ago that we thought that the baby came out completely sterile, and we're realizing, like, no, the uterus actually has its own kind of microbiome. And another thing that's interesting that's been coming out is the migration of the mother's gut microbes through the lymph system up into her breast tissue to get ready for breastfeeding. And I'm sure it's probably coming from the mouth too, but yeah, there's been this research that shows that the microbes actually leave the gut into the lymph system and then travel up to the breast tissue. So it can feed the baby. So that's another reason why breastfeeding is so important, because it actually is seeding the baby's gut after they're born.
That is really fascinating. I would love to get that research from you.
Yeah. I have a folder somewhere on my computer.
Let's share information. Mm-hmm. So that's just one, right? That's the beginning. And then there's also, of course, we think about the microbiome affecting fertility in a number of different ways as well. So the vaginal microbiome is another important microbiome to pay attention to for female health, but also for fertility. And I'm sure that you've talked about this, but just to put it out there. So Lactobacillus is the primary microorganism that we want to see in the vaginal ecology. 10 to the 7th to 10 to the 8th per gram of vaginal fluid should be Lactobacillus, which is huge, huge quantity of those mm-hmm. microorganisms. And one of the reasons that probiotics with Lactobacillus can be so useful as a suppository for women. That's a healthy vaginal microbiome, and we know that that's associated with good pregnancy outcomes as well, and that the reverse is also true, that dysbiosis can increase risk of infection, including bacterial vaginosis, other STDs, and also preterm delivery, urinary tract infections can all be the risk of all of those can be increased by vaginal dysbiosis. And pretty straightforward to treat. I mean, I'd actually lean on you if now would be a good time to talk about what that would look like for you, but because I'm sure you've worked with that more than I have, but I've seen some pretty amazing turnarounds for vaginal health, using.
Oh, I have an amazing story actually. I was treating a patient who was trying to conceive her second child, and she came into me, it's been 6 months. And so she came to me when I think she was about 34 years old, and she had no problem conceiving her first. And so she was a little concerned, and we discussed her vaginal health. And she said that ever since she had her son, that she was having trouble monthly with a bit of vaginal itching and kind of this on and off vaginosis, you know, just not too concerning, but enough to where it was just like a little irritating. And so I was like, well, let's treat that. And so what we did is we did boric acid suppositories, 600 milligrams is pretty standard, once at night for 3 weeks. And so I told her to skip that month from trying to conceive so she can do the boric acid capsules. And then next month she got pregnant. Whoa. So it was really awesome. I don't think that like kind of miraculous outcome would happen with everybody, obviously, but it was, I think that was her issue. I think she had this imbalance in her vaginal microbiome that was somewhat causing an imbalance, or being toxic to the sperm, or maybe messing with the cervical fluid is probably what was really happening, her mucus. And we talked on one of the previous episodes how important cervical mucus is and its composition to sperm. It's like the highway for sperm to get on and get up to the egg, right? So if you have an imbalance in your vaginal canal, then it can throw that cervical mucus pH off and its composition and make it pretty impossible to get pregnant.
Oh, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. It is one of those things, another one of those miracle case studies that gets your attention, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About the importance of these things. Yeah. Right. So in addition to the vaginal microbiome, then we have the gastrointestinal microbiome. And the important piece there to be aware of is that estrogen processing happens a lot in the liver and the gut. And that if we have good flora growing there, then it interacts with our estrogen in a way that allows it to recirculate and be utilized again. So any of the sort of fertility issues that are associated with poor processing of estrogens, it's really important to pay attention to the production of beta-glucuronidase in the gut. So those are produced by the healthy microbiome. So making sure that you have those. And that also becomes a two-way street, where if we get inflamed in our gut, then our liver can't do its job with estrogens either. So it's really important. Both the estrogen will affect the microbiome and the way that it's behaving, and the microbiome will affect the estrogen and how it's being processed. So just balancing, again, that helping that balance that microbiome can be very helpful for estrogen processing. I thought it was really interesting. I looked at an article today that said the gut microbiome is one of the principal regulators of circulating estrogen. So I didn't know that until today, but I thought it was pretty fascinating.
Ooh, I want that sting.
I'll get you the article.
Awesome.
It was pretty
probably
interesting.
Put it in the show notes for the podcast episode for anybody who's curious to read it.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. They're talking about estrogen processing, and this is why during menopause women get these conditions as well, is because our estrogen processing shifts then, so it affects cognition, gut health, reproductive health, of course. All of those things, hot flashes, all of that it has a potential to be affected by the microbiome. The other piece is that if we're eating a lot of carbohydrates or reprocessed, refined carbohydrates, that will affect blood sugar and can contribute to metabolic syndrome. And the gut microbiome can also contribute to those two things. So if you have dysbiosis, it can cause blood sugar dysregulation and contribute to metabolic syndrome. And I always think of those alongside potential PCOS as well. So managing blood sugar for PCOS patients.
Yeah.
So just really interesting. There are myriad ways that it really affects, the microbiome really affects our reproductive health and where estrogen in particular is concerned, in detoxification. I'm trying to make sure I don't miss the anything on my list here, because it was so interesting. The altered estrogen levels are associated with metabolic syndrome, a number of different cancers and endometrial hyperplasia, PCOS, endometriosis, fertility. And so it's the same list, actually. It looks very similar, right, to the one that we read earlier. But the cool thing is that we can alter it by supporting healthy microbiome and help our body support, support health.
And I think that's a kind of a big picture synopsis of what you're saying is a lot of women that have fertility issues, it's really common and totally understandable to assume that you have hormone imbalance. And that's what they're pursuing, is hormone imbalance. And Kristen even has a story of when she was trying to conceive, of going to see a naturopathic doctor and they were treating her hormone imbalance. But as you can see, hormone imbalance is tightly connected to gut balance because of the estrogen connection and how tightly controlled estrogen is to the gut and the liver.
Well, not only that, but the ability of the LPS toxin that we were talking about earlier, the ability for that to cause inflammation. And you and I were just discussing something that you learned recently at a conference that you went to about how LPS can actually inflame the ovaries and impair progesterone production. So right. Imbalanced gut health can kind of be a double whammy. Like you're increasing your estrogen, decreasing your ability to get rid of your estrogen, and you're also inflaming your ovaries and impairing your progesterone production. And that's going to affect follicle development as well as egg quality there too. So now that we've scared you all to death about all the things that can go wrong, let's kind of transition to
don't turn off the podcast yet, please. We're coming to the good stuff.
Let's talk about how we can investigate this first, and then we'll talk about some of the solutions. So what is our best tool to kind of investigate what's going on in the gut, not only from a functional perspective, but from a microbial balance perspective? And then, you know, some of these other markers like beta-glucuronidase, like what are we using to investigate this?
Okay. So I will give you, I'll tell you what I did in my practice and then probably refer you and maybe refer back to you to get your take on it as well. But what I really was thinking about in preparing for the podcast was gastrointestinal dysbiosis, which is, where most people are direct their testing at this point. You can do testing for oral dysbiosis. And of course we can do some sort of basic vaginal dysbiosis testing like BV and candidiasis and that sort of thing. But we, you know, there are a couple of one that's really popular right now is a GI map, right, by Diagnostic Solutions. I have used the CDSA, a comprehensive digestive stool analysis testing with parasitology. That's the one that I've used the most in my practice. But I think they're both very useful, or they have the same potential to be useful. One is looking at a culture, so growing out what's growing in the gut, or an immune reactivity to something growing in the gut. And then the other is looking at the DNA. So they're looking at which DNA microorganisms are there based on what DNA shows up in the stool. And either way, you're looking at pathogens, you're looking at the commensals or the good flora, you're looking at the mechanical function of the guts, the digestion. So do they have good stomach acid, pancreatic enzymes, bile release, all of that. And it just gives you, all across the board, it gives you a picture of where to direct your therapeutics. And for some people, you can use, you know, if someone has yeast, you might use one therapeutic. If they have overgrowth of C. diff, they might use one, or H. pylori, they might use another. So for me, and is it okay? I'm going to kind of go into a little bit to the product line because it's been so useful for me in my practice. And as a clinician, I would say that I stopped using those tests a long time ago. For the most part, I do use them on patients who are, especially pediatric patients, like we talked about before, patients who are fragile or sensitive. I would use the testing more. But what was happening for me is that I would look at, I'd get the CDSA test results, and I'd say, oh, we need biocidin, and then I'd get a different one that looked completely different, and I'd say, oh, we need biocidin. So I was using, you know, spending $400 of the patient's money and then using the same therapeutic every time. And so I ended up, really what I do to determine whether dysbiosis is playing a role is to use a therapeutic course of myocytin. And if they feel better, then I feel like I've ruled in dysbiosis as the underlying cause of the process that's going on. So I think it really depends on, you know, the other things to consider are, does the patient want to see exactly what's going on? What's your goal? Maybe with fertility, it can get a lot more complicated than a lot of sort of the more chronic gastrointestinal complaints. And so you may want to see numbers there where you're not as concerned about those numbers if you're treating reflux or gas and bloating, or, you know, so there may be times where as clinicians you can see, or beta glucuronidase is a really nice one to see, right, for someone who has hormonal dysfunction. And that's part of, I think that one is part of Genova Diagnostics, their CDSA as well. Mm-hmm. But so you could pick and choose, but the reality for me as a clinician is that I largely stop using those and just use the biocidin. And if I'm trying to see if vaginal dysbiosis is playing a role, then I use a biocidin capsule as a suppository, or I will use a lactobacillus. I like Zymogen's Probiomax daily as a suppository. Mm-hmm. And so that one I've seen really good effect with, but I'd love to hear from you guys too, what you routinely use or recommend for your patients. I mean, unless now is not the appropriate time for that.
No, it's great. One of the reasons we have you on is because we use biocidin in our practice all the time. I would like to just give the listeners a little bit more background on the product line. I think it's really special and unique because there's so minimal amount of products for this particular company. I also know that this company was originally created by a naturopath. Is that correct?
She's a PhD in acupuncture and oriental medicine.
Okay. But she was very knowledgeable in certain herbs, and she had a personal experience trying to treat something. So anyway, give us a little bit of background. Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. So Rachel Fresco is the founder of the company, and she actually developed the product from a veterinary formula, and it was in 1987. So it's been around for over 30 years. And just to put it in perspective, well, I'll tell you what the product is first, and then a little bit about the history of it. So it's a combination of 17 herbs and essential oils, and it's hyper concentrated in a proprietary method over the course of 6 months. And so that's why you can do a drop, you know, a drop or two drops in pediatric patients, you'll see healing happen in very small doses. At the same time, it's very gentle. Most people can tolerate it really easily. So it's a really lovely therapeutic in that way. But when Rachel developed this product, she actually developed for people with HIV to help them keep their pathogen load at bay, because they don't have the immune function to keep the opportunistic pathogens back. And so one of those doctors that was using the product submitted it to Great Smokies, which is now Genova Diagnostics. And the head of the lab called her, Dr. Lee called her and said, "What is in this product? It is killing everything we put against." And she said, "Is that a good thing?" And he said, "Yes, it's a very good thing." So on 250,000 stool samples on a CDSA test, this was the most effective herbal antimicrobial in killing the pathogens that they tested it against. And it was as effective as antibiotics in killing bacteria. And we now have preliminary data coming out of the Netherlands showing that it actually increases the commensal flora, both the quantity and the diversity, just the use of the biocidin. So it is a selective antipathogen, and it works against fungal, it works against bacterial, we have amoeba, viral, all of these different pathogens, and very broad acting. So that's why I said what I did about its ability to help me diagnose dysbiosis. I mean, if you want to know exactly what's causing the symptoms in the gut, then it is important to do testing. But if you just want to feel better, if you want to treat if the patient just wants to feel better, then sometimes it's adequate just to go, in my humble opinion, and this is not necessarily the company line, but just what I experienced in my clinical practice, it really can be adequate just to go straight for the product line, for the biocidin and some supportive products as well.
Yeah.
And it works as a antifungal or antimicrobial, excuse me, including antifungal, but it also helps to balance immune system function. So we have a research showing increase of the immune markers in the mouth with a single use of the biocidin throat spray by 66%. We also have reports of it bringing down immune markers when they're too high. So it has that adaptogenic effect where it doesn't force, you know, it doesn't cause this unilateral forcing of the immune function. It works with the immune system to help restore balance. And then sort of our special sauce, as our VP likes to put it, is the fact that it also breaks down biofilms. So the biofilm aspect of it is really, really vital to its effect as well. And I know that we're going to talk about that at some point anyway, but do you want me to talk about that a little bit right now?
Biofilms?
Yeah. Talk about biofilms and why they're important, because I don't actually think that we've really discussed very much mm-hmm. about biofilms. A lot of our discussion around gut has been like, okay, go see somebody to figure out exactly what's going on in there. Like, we give a lot of kind of diet and lifestyle strategies to start getting gut health back on track, but this is the first time we've really dug into herbal formulas and why they're very often superior to conventional antibiotics. And biofilms is one of the reasons for that. So yeah, go into that.
Okay. So just a little sort of biofilm 101 is that it's produced, it's a polysaccharide, sort of like an invisibility cloak is how I think about it. If you have an infection for more than 2 weeks, 80% of the time there will be a biofilm involved. And so what happens is those bugs, they produce a little tail that allows them to swim towards one another. Many of the pathogens do. And then they start talking to each other. And when they decide we've got enough of us here to justify the production of a biofilm, then they start to produce a biofilm. Candida or yeast infection, a really common vaginal infection, is notorious for the production of biofilms. So the biofilm then covers those microorganisms so that if you use monistat or if you use an herbal that doesn't penetrate biofilms, that they'll just repopulate once the dangerous agent to them goes away, right? So you're done, then
very
the biofilm breaks
that.
Open. It's very frustrating. And yeast in particular also produce a hyphae that will penetrate the lining of the mucosa, so that even though we shed the lining of our vaginal canal on a regular basis, those hyphae will continue to repopulate as well. So this using the biocidin to help disrupt the biofilm so that the antimicrobials can have an effect on it, it just completely changes the long-term efficacy of using the antimicrobials we have research with this product showing synergy with antibiotics as well, because it's the same thing can happen in the gut, right? Where you take an antibiotic and you feel better, or the sinuses are really notorious too for biofilms. You take an antibiotic, you feel better, you go off the antibiotic, 2 weeks later, the infection returns. So that's a classic sort of presentation of a biofilm re-inoculating or breaking open and reinfecting that area. And the biocidin really disrupts that in a number of different ways, but it's pretty amazing the research that we've got going on for the company and that we've had done with biofilms, eradication of biofilms in 24 hours in vitro.
Wow. That's really impressive. Yeah. You know, I love that you guys are doing so much research with your products. I was listening to a podcast the other day with Kiran Krishnan from Microbiome Labs, which is another company that's very committed to research around the microbiome and really investigating. Their flagship is kind of probiotics. But he was asked on that podcast, like, what other companies are really doing it right in terms of research and digging into things? And he's like, Biobotanical Research.
Awesome.
That was the only company.
That means
that
a lot.
Was the
coming
only company
Kieran.
That he really yeah. could say he felt strongly we're doing it right. So
wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I was like, yes, we're using that in our practice all the time.
That's awesome. It's good to hear. We'll have to send out a thank you to him
yeah.
for the shout out. That's great. You know, actually our probiotic that we use is licensed from Microbiome. So we use three of their five strains in our probiotic, the biobotanical research.
Their spore probiotic. Yeah. That's the one that we use mm-hmm. with our clients.
What's
yeah.
it called? Proflora?
Proflora 4R. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So it has those three Bacillus subtilis, coagulans, and Clausii, and then it also has some nutrients to heal the lining of the gut as well. So it's a nice combination formula. Rachel really likes the combination formulas, and part of the reason for doing that is that hopefully you send the patient out with four or five things rather than 20 bottles, yeah. you know, of things to take, right? So you can combine.
I know.
But it's really all built around that one initial biocidin. Mm-hmm. 6 of the 10 products contain biocidin. So it's just depending on where you're trying to treat and how you're trying to treat. And
yeah. So like tell us about a typical protocol. Cause I know that you guys have the other products that all complement each other. So what would that look like typically?
So the biocidin, if you're treating inside the gut, you would just use the straight biocidin liquid. We now have a liposomal form as well. And that liposomal form, the molecular structure of a liposome allows it direct absorption from the mouth into the systemic blood flow, lymphatic flow, central nervous system, intracellular too, which is important when you're working with an antimicrobial, right? Because then we're thinking mm-hmm. of all of the intracellular microorganisms like viruses and chlamydia, mycoplasma, all of the sort of the tick-borne illnesses, those sort of stealth pathogens, all of those things are inside a cell. And now we have a way to treat. We know in one of the things they studied with the Borrelia research for biocidin was that there was 74% better intracellular uptake with the mm-hmm. liposomal form.
That's Lyme disease, right?
Yep. So that was just with the, yes. Yeah. Thank you. So Borrelia is the, is the pathogen that causes Lyme disease. And we just were able to see that the biocidin was able to get inside the cell readily. And that's a huge deal when you're trying to treat something that exists inside a cell, right?
Yeah, so that's amazing.
Very helpful, exciting to be able to see that research come out. So both biocidin, but one for in the gut, one for outside of the gut. And then there's a throat spray that's really great for, especially for parents who have kiddos that are going to school. Excellent, just use before and after school to prevent upper respiratory infection. Did you want to add something, Dr. Nye?
No, she was holding my hand because I was like,
kid gets sick at daycare.
Oh yeah, I use that biocidin and throat spray all the time now. And even my her Nana came over, Matt's mom came over and was like giving her all these kisses and everything. And I was like, no, you're gonna get sick. She has a lot of sinus problems. So I was thinking okay. about the product when we're talking about.
You but
immediately I was like, open your mouth. And I sprayed it in her mouth and I was like, you need this.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. It's a great product that's the one that was studied and showed an immediate increase in immune markers when used or within 10 minutes. So that's a great prophylactic use of it. We have it now in a toothpaste as well. Toothpaste probably is, since we're talking about fertility and pregnancy, this product line is not approved, it's not tested for use during pregnancy. It is, the toothpaste probably okay. I would leave it up to the discretion of the practitioner because you're rinsing and spitting with it. It is a really clean toothpaste, so there's no preservative in it. The biocidin stabilizes the toothpaste. But because of the importance of the oral microbiome during pregnancy, I think really well directed for that, so long as the practitioner is comfortable with the fact that it hasn't been tested. I'm not sure if Colgate's been tested or Crest or any of those during pregnancy, but I for
probably
sure
not.
would be more comfortable using our toothpaste myself during pregnancy than I would the other ones.
Yeah.
Or the conventional ones, I should say. But the rest of the products not tested during pregnancy. So we avoid them then. The other use that as far as like mothers and children, I love the biocidin liquid for thrush and for nipple or a yeast infection in the nipple. So just a single drop on the nipple when the baby goes to nurse is really easy therapeutic for the treatment of thrush as well. And baby doesn't care. A mom and the mom's nipple gets treated at the same time. So it works. That works beautifully in that way. So the other supportive products are Olivirex, which is a high potency olive leaf. That's an excellent antiviral as well. Really useful for the SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, if there are any of the methane producing bugs there. And also the antiviral, it's also further antibacterial and it has drainage in it for the kidney and the liver. So because the formulator has this acupuncture and oriental medicine background, she adds drainage to a lot of these formulas, which is really useful, right? Keeps mm-hmm. things moving. And so the Olivirex does that specifically for kidney, lymph and liver. And so a nice combination with the biocidin if you're treating a really stubborn GI infection as well. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head all of the product lines. So I think Biotonic is the other one. It's a really nice adaptogen and easily tolerated Artemisia in that. So excellent for yeast to help prevent the growth of hyphae in yeast and any kind of mold, kind of fungally issues.
Could you explain adaptogen a little bit more?
Oh,
and like why it's important to take while you're doing some type of gut protocol?
Yes, absolutely. So an adaptogen is a herbal combination, usually an herbal combination that helps support. I always think of it like our vital force, or it's like putting money in the bank. So we're born with a certain amount. This is how I describe it to patients. We're born with a certain amount of money in the bank. There are things that we do that borrow on that, and there are things that we do that put money back in the bank. And this would be something that puts money back in the bank, basically helps restore our vital force so that we have some reserves, so that if our body encounters or our emotions or encounter stress of any kind, that we're more capable of tolerating that. So as we are dealing with the microbiome, then that can create some transient stress, right, on the body as we're cleaning up the gut, you know, anywhere that we have dysbiosis, as you're cleaning it up, it can create a little bit of stress. So using that, especially if you have people with chronic infection who need that additional support for their energy level. But just also the other piece too is that the artemisia that's in it is very useful as a antiparasitic. So the combination, mm-hmm. like I've used it to clear Giardia along with a biocidin in my practice with before and after testing. So
that's great to know, because I'm using combo. It with a patient right now that has a parasite. So I didn't know there was a client benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so I actually did my training in functional lab testing through continuing education with Restorative Wellness Solutions. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or not, but they kind of have developed some basic like backbones of protocols, and the biobotanical research products feature heavily in those protocols because of how effective they are. And one of the options for parasitic infections is using basically the whole suite of biobotanical research, including the biotonic, and then of course adding in the GI detox, which is a binding formula. You can explain why that's important during that protocol.
It's great to have that. It's comprehensive kit, right? So we're using the full product line for a couple of months we do see improved outcome if people can have the discipline and the financial means to use the full product line. It can be very, very helpful in really reestablishing a healthy microbiome. And the GI detox, so it's a binder, it's activated charcoal and zeolite clay and silica, and basically those things will bind up toxins in the gut, whether they're produced by the killing action of the biocidin, or whether it's heavy metals, or whether it's unconjugated estrogens, whatever it is, the GI detox will bind it so that you cannot reabsorb it, and then it gets eliminated through the stool. And it can be very helpful acutely with die-off or Herxheimer reaction from using antimicrobials. But it can also, the same thing happens like when we get viral gastroenteritis, so the stomach flu, right, is what most people call it. It's the production of the endotoxin, right? So that virus produces a toxin that irritates the lining of the gut that causes the nausea and vomiting, causes loose stool. And taking a binding agent like this when you have that going on can be really, really helpful. I mean, I'm here to tell you. It is a dramatic difference if you have that in hand. That's one of the things that we keep in our medicine cabinet. I mean, useful for food reactions, for, you know, for if you get a toxic exposure, if you get nausea, vomiting, any of those things. It's pretty dramatic, immediate response for most people.
Funny story. My mom called me the other day because she thought she took too much of her thyroid medication. And she needed to drive somewhere. She was like going on a trip or something to visit her mom in Eastern Washington. So she was driving like 3 or 4 hours, and she's like, well, what'll happen if I take too much of my thyroid medication? I was like, well, you don't probably want to be driving while you're going to like have a big hypothyroid flare. And she's like, well, what can I do? And I was like, well, you can make yourself throw up. She's like, no, I can't do that. So I was like, well, take a binder. So
that's it. It's perfect.
So I did. I had her take some GI detox, and she just had like a tiny bit of jitters, and that was it, from taking like 2 or 3 times the amount of thyroid she meant to, because I don't know how she did it, but somehow she
sleepwalking as she took
So I think what she has like different pill containers for different times of day, and I think she grabbed the wrong one.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Accidentally took it. So yeah, I helped her out with that. But yeah, good story about the ability for it to like keep things from being absorbed when you don't want them to.
Yeah. Once you see it work, it's just amazing how effective it is. And just on that note, since you brought up medication and binding, it's really important to take it away from medications, especially medications that require really regular dosing, like blood pressure meds and right. psychotropic meds.
Thyroid medication.
Yep. That one too. So I always like to throw that in so that people don't go hog wild with it, because other than that effect, it's a really low intervention therapeutic. It's very, mm-hmm. you know, safe for the most part to take. So,
yeah, I usually recommend it like before bed when somebody hasn't eaten or taken anything for several hours. And it's, you know, good for that like overnight time when the GI tract isn't doing anything else. It's like, let's go suck up all that stuff from the day and make sure it doesn't get reabsorbed.
That's really when I find it most useful and easiest to take too. And we do a lot of our detoxification overnight too. So it just makes sense that to have it sitting there in your small intestine when you're releasing those toxins at night. So
yeah, agreed.
I have the same plan.
Well,
I think I skipped one product, and I don't know if it matters or not, but Proflora is the other one. And that's, I did talk briefly about that. It is a soil-based organism, and then it does have quercetin in it. So it's great for people with histamine issues. So allergies, but also histamine intolerance. Mm-hmm. It's 100 milligrams of quercetin, and it's QU995, which is, I think there's only one other company using it, and I couldn't get a hold of it in the United States, but it's 170 times more absorbable than other quercetin on the market right now.
Cool.
So very bioavailable quercetin. And then it does have marshmallow root as well as a demulcent herb to heal the gut, the kidneys, the bladder. And then it also has, aloe. The aloe that's in it is not for demulcent properties, which means like a salve basically, but it's the high tannin part of the aloe to help with motility, to mm-hmm. help stimulate bowel movement.
So awesome for constipation.
Yes, indeed. And that's something I would say too about this binding agent. So the binding GI Detox Plus, one thing that it has in it that I don't know if any other company that is doing this has, that it has that aloe in it, and binding agents can be very constipating for some people. Mm-hmm. So it does have the aloe, high tannin aloe to help with motility as well.
In the GI detox.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is the binding agent. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know this was really awesome for Kristen and I. I hope our listeners were inspired and not super bored. But just to summarize with Dr. Strand, that, you know, obviously we talked about the microbiome a lot and how important it is to fertility. Hopefully you guys have a better idea of why, like the mechanism of action behind that. And then also how to get tested if you want to figure out your own imbalance, if you have it or not. And then also maybe even, you know, talk to your naturopathic doctor, your functional medicine doctor about this particular brand and give it a trial and see if it helps. And Jocelyn, where can they find you more? Is it you're now working strictly with biobotanical research, right?
I am. I just took a full-time position with the company. I just closed my medical practice down. If you're interested in finding practitioners who work with the product line, you can call the company, and we have that. I know Dr. Pocha, Emily Pocha, does telemedicine. She's in the San Diego area, and she also specializes in fertility, and she's really well-versed in this product line. So if there's someone looking for her or for a practitioner that has good knowledge base in this product line, she'd be a really good go-to.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you can look at the more on the product line at biocidin.com, and there's some frequently asked questions there.
Okay. But that's great that they can. Yeah. So our listeners can actually call the company and potentially get some practitioners as well that are using the product. And obviously, yes. Kristen and I are using
it. And yeah, that's what I was virtually.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering. If you all, I didn't know. I should have.
Well,
asked
we didn't want to like just promote us. Obviously, we want people to have options, and so we're just wondering, especially because people like to work face-to-face with people, you know, and not just telemedicine. And so if they can find somebody near them to do face-to-face and, you know, or potentially accept insurance or whatever it is, that would be a great option for them as well.
Well, I didn't realize when I said that you all also do telemedicine.
Oh, that's okay.
And so I think I think it would obviously be a no-brainer to work with you directly on these products. And for you too, if you have questions for me as established practitioners, I'd be happy to talk with you at any point about particular cases or more about the, if I can be of assistance. I mean,
yeah,
we shall see. But you have my email address, so we can talk about whatever your needs might be.
Great. I have one last question.
Okay.
How about H. pylori? Is this, because I use totally, and that's one of the reasons that I do like testing is, you know, if you've got H. pylori or some other thing that might need different antimicrobials, is Biocidin or any of the products in the biobotanical suite, are those effective for H. pylori?
We have extensive reports on H. pylori. It's something that we've gotten hundreds of reports from practitioners using the product line to clear H. pylori. I would consider using the Olivirex with it because H. pylori can be such a stubborn stubborn microorganism, but also consider treating, you know, I would make sure you're incorporating treating the whoever else is in their microbiome neighborhood, right? So if you're treating a woman, then making sure her husband and her kids are also treated, and strongly consider using the toothpaste along with it. So because it will kill whatever's in the mouth and transmission through spoons and toothbrushes and all of that stuff.
Smart.
Awesome. I love it. Well, cool. I did not know that it was effective for H. pylori. So that is good to know.
It's actually how I used it on myself the first time was to treat H. pylori and my, I think he was like 6 months old at the time. So based on his weight, which I think was about 25 pounds at the time, I was doing 2 drops twice a day for him of the Biocidin. And then I did the 15 drops twice a day for myself and it cleared H. pylori for me. So
fascinating.
That's so much better than
I love it.
Gosh, right now they're using like triple antibiotic therapy and it's just awful. And like Pepto-Bismol, right. I think. And yeah.
Yes, exactly. three antibiotics, not just one. I'm really excited. We have a potential case study coming forward with a woman who has been on 15 antibiotics in the last 5 months for treating a chronic sinus infection. And we're going to try to treat it with LSF Biocidin and keep my fingers crossed and that it's going to be amazing. If we could clear something that that 15 rounds of antibiotics didn't clear, then that would be remarkable and exciting.
I want to hear about that if it's successful.
Yeah, we'll follow up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a fascinating episode. For some of our listeners, go back and listen to it again. You will learn something different the second time. I always love that we get to prepare these episodes and we get to listen to them a couple of times because it's always a learning experience to speak to really experienced practitioners like this. So thank you so much, Dr. Strand, for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was a great talk with you and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.